Hi, my name is Mike Bach. I'm an alcoholic. Hey, Nicolette. How's it going? First of all, there's a lot of newcomers here, and I'm not going to get all your names, but I think there was Taylor, Mindy, Mike, John, Ross. Oh, Ross isn't there anymore. I guess we scared him off. But anyway, welcome to AA. And, you know, we're all very glad you're here. And the only thing I can really tell you that you might believe is that you never, ever have to drink again if you don't want to. And I didn't think that was possible when I came to AA. I thought that I was doomed, for lack of a better word. And all I really thought of AA prior to coming here was that it was a forum where people like me would basically get together and complain about life and how we had been done wrong, and we'd get a sympathetic ear for all our protestations and all this kind of stuff, and you know, just basically sitting around talking about how life generally sucked. And I knew that I wouldn't be able to take that for very long, and I certainly did not believe that there was going to be an answer here for me. I certainly didn't believe that sobriety was going to be what it has become for me, you know, which is quite simply the best thing that ever happened to me. So anyway, I got sober on June 3rd of 2003, and I have a sponsor, and I'm privileged to sponsor a couple guys right now. Congratulations, Blair, in 5 years, and Mark also celebrated this month, and I'm very happy for that. And I've seen them both be real, you know, face in their own way some adversity and so forth, but have really shown how spiritual principles can operate in your life and turn really difficult, challenging, I'm trying to use a word that's not a cuss word here, but really bad stuff into a good example for the people that follow them. And it's, you know, it's one of the things that AA does that really I didn't experience in the outside world, which was that power of example, that power of demonstration, where you see how someone is and what they do and how they act, and you're just inspired, you know. It's not just a matter of, oh, yeah, I relate and I identify, but it's like, you know, and I see a lot of people in this room, and some of you know it and some of you don't, that have set that example for me and have, you know, continued to reinforce the belief that this is the place for me. You know? So anyway, I've got a home group. It's the Morning Express group at Bayshore Presbyterian Church. Meets at 9 a.m. on Saturday mornings. And I never thought I'd like that group, but it's turned out to be okay, so screw it, it's my home group. And it was funny because as Lloyd was talking, it made me think about a lot of stuff, and thanks for a great talk, Lloyd. You know, but it made me think a lot about how we talk about our drinking here, and why is it that, you know, despite, you know, varied backgrounds and ages and all kinds of stuff, that we have all these things different that, you know, I can relate to just about any alcohol. I mean, I can relate to any alcoholic, because really it's that those feelings of these just disturbed emotional wreckage type stuff that I seem to experience on a daily basis long before I started drinking, actually. That's, you know, that I can hear in everybody else's story. And it's when I heard that for the first time, and I don't think I realized it, but when I heard someone talk about their drinking for the first time, I didn't realize that what I was relating to was not the name of the bar or what they drank or, you know, anything like that. But it was this feeling of being alone, this feeling of complete and total despair, nowhere to go, no friendly direction, none of it. And that's what hit me about it. No one said, you know, I mean, it's not like when I heard alcoholics tell their stories, I mean, sometimes we do this, but I mean, I never heard, yeah, I used to line up Jack Daniels 15 in a row. I mean, you know, you hear that every now and again, but usually not from anybody I want what they got. You know, it's, but I never really was impressed with that stuff. You know, what I was impressed with was relating on this level that I didn't think existed in my life, this spiritual level or lack thereof, that really got me believing, even though I didn't like anything of what I had heard, that I belonged here. you know, and that's a powerful thing. And we have a lot of things to share with our fellow alcoholics here, and that's just one of them. I started drinking when I was 16, and in the interest of not boring the crap out of people any more than I usually do, I'm not going to talk about my first drink too much, only to say that I fell in love. You know, it was just the most miraculous, amazing thing that ever happened to me. My first drinks, maybe two, three, or four, were involuntary, and those were the last involuntary drinks I had ever taken. You know, once I had experienced alcohol and what it did for me and what it did to me and how it made me feel, there was nothing that had happened in my life up to that point that could even compare. And it made it such that the most important thing in my life became to drink. And I can't say from that my first drink that I drank it all the time, but whenever I could, I did. And my life quickly became about drinking. And as you look through my life, you can see, you know, a pattern of, you know, that alcohol was the most important thing to me, you know. And a couple ways I demonstrated that was that, you know, my parents oftentimes would challenge me on my drinking, and they'd say, if you can't do something about your drinking, then we can't have you in our family anymore. And I said, okay. And I didn't go back to my parents. I kept on drinking, you know. I had the law say, if, you know, you drink again, we're gonna send you to jail. We're gonna take away your driving privileges, you know. And I said, okay. And I kept on drinking anyway. And I had doctors say, if you keep on drinking like you're gonna drink, then you're gonna be dead by the time you're 35. And I said, okay, you know, whatever. Didn't seem like I had much to live for by the time I got here besides drink. And looking back on it, it was a horrible and pathetic and quite often disgusting existence. And, but at the time, it was all I knew, and I couldn't think of anything better. It took me coming to AA to find out that there actually was something better. Because people would tell me all throughout my life, you don't have to do this. There's a life out there for you. And I got this a lot. You've got potential. You know? And, you know, I heard a speaker once say, you ever notice that people who actually do great things are never told they have potential? They just, you know, like, do them. You know, and I used to kind of, like, have this strategy where I'd, like, bank my potential, you know. And, you know, I'd use it as a defense. You just said I have potential, so there's really no need for us to continue discussing this, really. You know, I'll use my potential when I'm damn good and ready. But the thing is, I never did. And I never took advantage of opportunities that were given to me. And I never appreciated the love of my family. And I never appreciated the caring and kindness of my friends. And I never appreciated my education or anything like that. Because, again, alcohol was the most important thing. And all that other stuff was backdrop that I would engage in to the extent I had to in order to continue drinking the way I wanted to. And it turns out that it really wasn't drinking the way I wanted to. It meant it was drinking the way I had to. But because by the time I got here, I was not one of these guys who, you know, I'd wanted to stop drinking for a long time. And I was one of those guys who would, you know, say to myself when I woke up the following morning after a bender or something like that, I'm never going to do this again. I can't keep on living like this. This is awful. And I would become really cognizant of what I was doing to the people around me. And it made me feel bad. It made me feel guilty. And I would tell them. You ever notice that, you know, when we do something really screwed up to another person, the first thing we do is tell them how we feel about it, as if, you know, they care. But that's what I would say. And that's how I felt. And, you know, but none of that guilt, none of that shame, none of that remorse that I had suffered as a result of my drinking and doing the things that I had done, was enough to really give me any real appreciable sobriety. As a matter of fact, I had more than one person who I had stopped drinking for. Okay, I'll stop and I'll do it for you. You know, at some point, see me get so miserable and so drowned in self-pity and anger and all that kind of stuff that they would say, oh God, just drink, you know. When you have someone beg and plead with you to not drink anymore, and then later on just give up and say, drink. I don't care. Just stop being the way you are. That told me something very important about alcoholism, even though I didn't realize it at the time, which is that it affects me when I'm drinking and when I'm not drinking. And, you know, I had periods of sobriety because I was in trouble with the law or because my company was going to fire me or because, you know, my health was in bad shape or whatever it may have been, where I didn't get any better. I mean, I wasn't drinking and I wasn't doing stupid stuff for that moment and not getting arrested and that kind of thing. But I didn't feel any better. My life didn't all of a sudden have this, you know, wonderful. Yeah, I didn't have this wonderful epiphany like, okay, life is good. I'm not drinking. I would say life sucks. I can't drink, you know. And I did a lot of stupid and silly things throughout my drinking. And after I graduated college, which somehow I managed to do, I drank myself through a lot of really good opportunities. I had a job with a representative for U.S. Congress. I had a job with a big law firm that would have given me a ride to law school if I just didn't screw up. And I drank myself out of that. And I drank myself out of a lot of stuff till I ended up where I really felt at home, working at a liquor store. And from there, I went to driving keg trucks for Miller, and then I worked for Budweiser for a while, and got into doing some drugs. And Lloyd, I want to thank you for actually saying pot and saying oxycodone, and I'll tell you why. A lot of times, if you're new here, you'll hear people talk about drugs, and they'll use terms like other substances. Look, if I had heard that, I wouldn't have known what to make of it. I think what I appreciated about Alcoholics Anonymous was that people were honest about the kind of stuff that no one else wanted to talk about, or people were scared to talk about, or they didn't know how to talk about. You know, other substances, I'm like thinking, what, you know, flour, molasses, you know, all that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, and I mean, I remember buying flour being led to believe that it was a other substance, but, you know, to me, it was all a function of my alcoholism. Thank you. And, you know, I don't believe that, it's not my experience, that a spiritual observant and adherence to the fifth tradition constitutes changing the words. You know, I found an answer here because I'm an alcoholic. And I also found answers to a lot of other things. And it has been my experience in AA that there's never been a problem that I haven't found an answer to here. And that's just it, you know. I believe the key for me is the fact that I am an alcoholic, and I did drink a lot, and I did do a lot of things that a lot of us do. And, you know, but really what I came to discover about myself in AA were these defects of character that we talk about, this selfishness, this deep-seated hatred and anger. We use the word resentment here because it sounds nice, but I mean, if I resent you, I hate your guts. And I felt that way about everybody who in one way or another got my way, you know. And it didn't matter if you hit me across the head with a baseball bat or if you stole my baseball glove when I was 5 years old. I mean, I hated you just the same. And, the way I would remember people when I drank, you know, from my drinking days, is they say, hey, do you remember so-and-so from me? Yeah, that guy beat the crap out of me one day, embarrassed me in front of everybody, and that's all I would know about the person, you know? And I would, you know, the way I remembered people was through my resentments, through my anger toward those people, sometimes through my fear of those people, you know? It's a horrible, awful way to live, but like I said, I didn't know any better. And I don't believe, you know, unlike Lloyd, I mean, you know, I didn't have alcoholism in my immediate family. I had people who drank, and I had a dad who actually was told by doctors to stop drinking, and he did. Didn't have to go to one meeting about it, didn't have to share his feelings with another alcoholic, didn't have to do any of that stuff. He just stopped drinking, and is pretty much the same as he was from when he was drinking, you know. And, you know, but that wasn't my experience. You know, a doctor tells me to stop drinking, I'm going to stop taking whatever he's prescribing so I can keep on drinking. You know, and I did that often. So anyway, I lived in Washington, D.C. for most of my drinking, and that's where I drove the beer trucks, and that's where I got into all kinds of things that I never thought I would get into, that I thought I had some modicum of moral fiber to prevent me from doing these things, like dealing drugs and using them intravenously and bookmaking and all this kind of stuff, that if you had asked me, you know, a couple of years before I got into this, would you ever do this? I would get angry at you for having the nerve to ask me such a thing. You know? How could you think such a thing? And my mom would say, well, you kind of got a pattern going here, you know, it's just the next logical step. But that's what I did, and I found myself doing a lot of things that I wasn't very proud of. And I found that the answers to what I thought were my problems were really, really, really bad. As a matter of fact, the answer was worse than the problem, you know. And I'll give you an example. A lot of you have been to D.C., and if you've ever been on the BW Parkway, it goes between Washington and Baltimore, and there's a strip of trees and brush in between the north and southbound lanes. And using some ill-gotten gains, I bought myself what I thought was a very nice car, and I got really loaded and decided to drive to Baltimore because the beer is cheaper up there. So I'm cruising up to Baltimore, and apparently I nod off the wheel, and next thing I know, I've rolled over this car, and I'm in these bushes. And I'm loaded, and I know it, and I know, I think I might have been knocked out for a while, and I know the cops are coming. My solution to this problem is to try and blow up the car. And so I had some pyrotechnics, if you will, that I bought actually earlier, not planning to blow up the car, but, and I tried, and I saw this movie once where somebody like set a bottle rocket in the gas tank and lit it, and then, you know. And so I did it, and like an idiot, I'm standing there. The car's right here, like, listening. And then I hear going, and it makes its whistling noise, and it goes, and nothing happened. So I'm like, shh, darn, what do I do now? And then all of a sudden, see a little flame come up the pipe, and I see the fuel line begin to ignite because it's turned over, and the car blows up, and I'm 30 miles away from my house. And you know what? That made complete and total sense to me at the time. Like, I got home, and I'm like, thank God that car blew up. You know, it's just like, you know, just crazy stuff. And I've got my story is punctuated with a lot of crazy, you know, some crazy stuff like that, and trips to jail and getting arrested and getting thrown out of houses and all this kind of stuff. But I think that stuff never really got to me about my drinking. It wasn't after, you know, one of those crazy days where, you know, the police raided my house and, you know, brought me out in my underwear, like, you know, I feel like I'm in an episode of Cops, you know, and all this kind of stuff. You know, that stuff never really gave me pause about my drinking. You know, it was more the boring, everyday acts of selfishness and being inconsiderate and unloving and unkind to people that I said that I cared about the most. You know, I honestly believe I didn't come into AA on the heels of one of those big, you know, being arrested or anything like that. I came in really because I had nowhere else to go, but what brought me in here was not a particular bender or, you know, a huge amount of drinking or ending up in this weird state or anything, but it stopped working to the extent where I couldn't forget or drink off what I was doing to the people that cared about me. And when I got sober, I was with my folks, and for some reason, even though I pretended that I was tough and unaffected and I had been diagnosed as sociopathic by a couple shrinks, you know, when my mom cried, it got to me, you know. And when my dad screamed and yelled and got angry and worried and all this kind of stuff, and my brother, who really is probably the most even-keeled person I knew, just became unbalanced by what I was doing. And my work tried desperately to help me get better and to give me opportunities to get better, only for me to say, I don't have a problem, you know. But those fractured relationships that on some level at least were very important to me, you know, were meaningless when it came to drinking. I think that's what got me here. And so I came to AA not because I wanted to be here, you know, and not because I thought there was an answer, but I truly couldn't show up anywhere else without feeling this overriding sense of guilt and shame about who I was and what I'd become, you know? And I oftentimes think that I should have had better motives for coming here, but it turns out you don't need those, you know? And so I come to meetings, and it's kind of around the corner from my folks' house, and I don't like, and where I got sober, everybody hugs you after the meeting, everybody, and I just couldn't stand that, and people talked in a language that I didn't relate to, and or at least, you know, that I didn't want to hear. They words like serenity, you know, and then they'd say, celebrate your serenity, and you know, and I really was like, is this how it's going to be? I'm going to be hanging around all these goofballs who are using four-syllable words to describe stuff that doesn't matter in my life, you know, and it's not how it turned out to be. How it turned out to be, and, you know, I relate to Lloyd's experience of just being kind of pulled into this. You know, not kicking and screaming necessarily, but, I mean, I was getting pulled into this. And I remember distinctly not liking how people were all soft and fuzzy and feely and touchy and all that kind of stuff. And I got a sponsor who was none of those things, absolutely none of those things. I mean, he told me the truth about, you know, my condition. He would tell me to do all this stuff, and he would, you know, call me a lot of names a lot of the time when I was acting like an idiot and all this kind of stuff. And all of a sudden, I found myself longing for the warm and fuzzy AA, but I was already kind of invested in this one, so... And I'd go to these meetings, and this guy would take me everywhere. And he'd make me... I went to a meeting every day with that guy for the first 3 years of my sobriety. I did not have to choose a meeting. I didn't choose my sponsor. He said, I'm sponsoring you. What are you going to do about it? Nothing, you know. And it turned out to be the greatest thing that ever happened to me. And I believe all of us, if we're, you know, if we're serious about changing our lives, or we're serious about stopping what we want to do, we gravitate toward the people who can help us. And I didn't like this guy, but I knew he could help me because he demonstrated something to me that I would later read about in the big book, that his whole deportment shouts at the new man or the prospect or something like that, that he is a man with a real answer. And his behavior and the way he acted and the way he talked demonstrated to me that he knew what he was doing here. And it was, like I said, amazing. And I remember not liking my first year of sobriety at all. You know, I couldn't sleep. I woke up in sweats all the time. I started to have total recall for all the crap that I thought I had blacked out and all this kind of stuff. And I would wake up in the middle of the night remembering something I had done 10 years earlier. Like, did that really happen? It was, you know, and through this time, I'm going through the steps and a lot of that stirring all this kind of stuff up. And I remember my sponsor would take me to these meetings of his old home group down in DeKalb, Illinois. And they would put you in a corner, and then just every one of them would come and talk to you. You'd be standing in the same corner, like, you know, for like 2 hours. Everybody come and talk to you one-on-one. It was kind of like some Gitmo thing for alcoholics. And they just, like, you know, look down at you. What are you doing about your, you know, and I just, like, I don't know, you know. And I said, I don't know a lot. But one of the things those guys did, and I hear my better half talk about people smoking and cussing and talking about God. And one of the things they did is after that was over with, they took me out to this restaurant that we had a really foul name for, and it was called Around the Clock. And they would, after they would talk about AA and about the steps and all this kind of stuff, they would get really, really disgusting and tell really bad taste jokes. And it was the first thing that made me feel comfortable here. You know, first time I ever smiled in AA is when I, you know, I mean, it would make most people cringe, but I mean, it made me feel comfortable. And I knew at that time that this is where I belong. And my experience since in AA has been wonderful. And a lot of nice things have happened to me, which I'm sure the new people in here could really care less about. But the most important thing is that I've been given a solution here. And to me, what a solution is something that not only works for me, but works for everybody else around me. And the rub of a solution is that you never get it. Spend the rest of your life trying to get it. And the result of that, taking those actions over and over again, is being able to live a bit easier, being able to sleep a bit better, being able to work a bit better, being able to be a human being, you know. And I owe that all to God, who I never thought would have anything to do with me, and to a bunch of people who I didn't like when I first got here, but turned out saving my life. Thanks a lot.